Hey guys, I'm Valerie.
And I'm Jasmine, and this is Crafts, Drafts, and Crime.
So just as a reminder, this is your second episode of the week, so that means it's going to be pretty short. And for that reason, we're doing two this week, so you had already gotten one on our normal release day, and this is your second one. So if you're just looking at this randomly, we don't normally do episodes this short, but we didn't want to skip some of these really interesting cases. So today we are going to be talking about Brittany Locklear. Now, have you ever heard of her, Jasmine?
No.
Okay. So Brittany Locklear, I had read like this one thread on Reddit a really long time ago where people were talking about like, oh, what's the most famous true crime story in your state? And a couple people had said Brittany Locklear from North Carolina, and I was like, why do I not know who that is? And then I looked into it, and there's not that much information, and I don't know why people think that this is the most, and my thought is that they're from this area, and that's why they feel that way. But to me, this is not like the even close to being the most well-known thing in North Carolina. I think actually Aisha Degree is, but I don't know. Anyways. So if you have heard of this, let me know, because I would just like to know where you're from, because it's just interesting to me, because I don't know, I didn't think it was that popular. Anyways, I digress. The sources for today are Medium, Fayetteville Observer, WRAL News, US News, and the News and Observer. So when Brittany Locklear was a 5-year-old girl, she was a very happy-go-lucky kid. And she was, you know, how people always say people are wise beyond their years. Like, people said that about 5-year-old Brittany. By the time that she was 1, she was already walking and talking. Now, I don't have a kid, but Jasmine, how crazy is that?
That is, I want to say it's pretty crazy, but also Ollie was she's kind of like, a late bloomer, but just like comparing Ollie to like my two nieces, my youngest niece, she's actually only like 8 months old and she's already trying to walk. Okay. She just started crawling and pulling herself up on like furniture and stuff. Mm-hmm. And like she babbles and stuff like that, so I think that's pretty early, which is pretty awesome.
That is really cool. And so for Brittany, by the time that she was 2, she was already becoming like kind of independent as a kid. So by age 5, Brittany already knew that she wanted to fly planes or be a doctor. Now, I don't know about you, but when I was a little kid, my dreams were not like good ambitions. So I think that that's really cool that she already had her mindset on some like really badass careers. So
yeah, that's dope. I did, you know, ever since I was younger, I said I either wanted to be 2 things, and one of those things was a teacher and the other thing was a cop.
Oh, okay.
I am neither one of those now.
Nor will you ever be either one of those.
Never. No.
I feel like being a teacher is a very common like thing for kids to want to be when they grow up, because you know that's one of their big influences when they're young. That makes perfect sense to me. My goals this is almost embarrassing. Well, when I was really young, I wanted to be an author. I wanted to just be a writer. And when I got a little bit older than that, like I'm talking like 10 to 12 years old, I actually wanted to be a cone dropper. So, you know, the people who hang off, who like work with construction and they hang off the back of the truck and they drop the cones on the highway.
That is fucking amazing. I never would have thought of that.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I guess we had my parents make fun of me for it still. We had been driving like on a vacation or something like that. And I was like, this is what I want to do. I want to do that. Like, that looks like fun. I can do that. They get paid, you know, a good enough wage that I can afford to do that. Like, it would be great. It would be a great career move. And, you know, so I really admire, you know, Brittany, who was like, oh, I want to fly planes, or I want to be a doctor, or I want to do something, you know, very ambitious. And I was like, I just want to hang off a truck and drop cones. So there are 2 kinds of people. But, you know, anyways, so Brittany was very independent, very intelligent. She enjoyed going to school and she enjoyed going to church, and she got along with everybody and she loved hugs. So she was actually a really very tiny girl. And in some of the articles that I had read, they said she was the typical height of like a 3-year-old instead of a 5-year-old. So she was the smallest and youngest child at West Hoke Elementary School, which is in Rayford, North Carolina. Her kindergarten class referred to her as Little Brittany. That's how tiny she was.
Aww.
So Rayford, just as a frame of reference, is it's in Hoke County, North Carolina. We're going near Fayetteville. It's a small town of about 4,000 residents at this time. So on Wednesday, January 7th of 1998, Brittany got up at 6:30 a.m. to get ready for school. She ate breakfast and picked out her outfit with her mom, Connie Locklear, and the pair decided on a green and white t-shirt with green denim overalls, like coveralls, that, you know, like go over top of it. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. And her hair was in a ponytail, and she had on white socks, and she had green and pink gym shoes on. So she sounds adorable. It was a pretty brisk morning in January, so Brittany also had on her red winter coat on top of her outfit, and then she had her purple backpack. So the way that the bus stops were there is that they're at like the edge of the driveway. So it was 150 yards from her house where the end of the driveway was, where Brittany caught the bus for school. So she walked happily toward the end of the driveway to head to school, and Connie watched her out the window, as she always did. And knowing that the bus was going to be there any second, and, you know, there's, mind you, there's, you know, this is how the kids do it, period. So there's other kids, you know, right on the same road, like on the end of their driveway. And so Connie walked away to use the bathroom. Well, their neighbor, Rose Johnson, was doing the same thing that Connie had been doing. She was watching her child walk to the bus stop at the end of the driveway. But at 7:02 a.m., moments before the bus arrived, a truck was speeding down the road that Rose did not recognize. Well, it stopped directly in front of Brittany, and a man got out of the truck, grabbed Brittany, and sped off. She did not even have time to react or to resist the man. It happened so quick. And at first, Rose wasn't even sure what she just saw. Like, that's how quickly he acted. She was, like, staring in horror for a second. She's like, wait a minute. What did he just do? Like, how is Brittany gone? So, Rose screamed. She, like, screamed bloody murder. And just as the truck was driving away, the school bus was pulling up to get the other kids from the stop. So
that is crazy.
It's horrifying. There are people there. The school bus is right there. What on earth is this person doing?
Exactly. Because I'm like thinking about me when I was younger. So when I was in elementary school, I waited at the bus stop at my grandma's house, which is literally, you know, outside of the fence. But it was me and my cousin. So like, we felt pretty safe, you know, but it was along a busy like road in the small town that we were, that I would wait for the bus for. But like when I got older and I was in middle school, we moved. So I had to go to like a different school from my cousins, and my bus stop was around a curve, and it was just on a random street down the road from my house. So it was a good little walk. Mm-hmm. And like just hearing stuff like this, it's like that could have been me, because there is literally like nobody who knew me.
Right.
You know, other than like the one other person that I waited for the bus stop for, because it was just me and one other kid. And like, we never talked, but still, that's insane.
I know. I remember that too with school, like for middle school, and I didn't have a bus for elementary school. I lived too close to the school, but for middle and high school, the bus stop was like it was at a random house up the road. And so everybody met at those bus stops. And I even see that around here, you know, when I'm driving to go to work in the morning or whatever, and there's clusters of kids at one spot. Like that's how it is here. And you go and you pick up, you know what I mean? And in Germany, just for reference too, like you actually get on a city bus. There's no like school. I mean, it's used as a school bus, but it's the same bus they use as a city bus. And so you go to like where the bus station is. So this was like a really safe way to be able to pick up kids like immediately in front of their house. Like it seemed safe to me.
Right. So like I was just remembering like when my sister went to elementary school, We lived pretty close to the school. But like the kids who lived in our neighborhood, is a pretty big neighborhood. They had to all walk to the elementary school. Mm-hmm. Like they could, they would not give them like a bus to come pick up the kids because they were so close, supposedly. But like the way I'm thinking about it is like, I wish I could compare it to something. Okay. Oh, well, this won't make sense to anybody, but to you. So let's say my house was like the mall. Okay. And the school was over there by the post office. But since it was that close, they didn't want to supply a bus for those kids. So they made those kids, elementary school kids, which if we remember, like it's kindergarten through fifth grade in Florida. I don't know if it's different for other places, but yeah. So like they would all have to walk. Like that to me seems super dangerous. And it was off of another highway, or not a highway, but another major like traffic road, whatever.
Right. No, that's exactly how mine was. I mean, I didn't live like up the block from the school. Like I had to walk. It probably took me 20 minutes to get there. So probably a mile away. And so in the winter, I would catch a ride with one of my neighbors because it was freezing. But, you know, my parents worked. Like, and they didn't give us a bus because we were too close. So, like, it's
crazy.
It is crazy. And it's really dangerous. And it's crazy to think about that now. I wonder if they still do it like that, actually. I'd be curious to know. But so, anyways, so Rose witnesses this. She's in shock. She screams. And is the school bus, you know, it's picking up the kids now. The truck is already gone. She ran over to the Locklear's house and she started banging on the door. So Connie came to the door and she told Connie what just happened. And Connie is like in complete shock. She's like, you, that can't be true. Like, there's no way. So her and her husband, which is Brittany's stepfather, sped to the elementary school and they actually beat the bus there. So they waited in the parking lot for it to get there. So when it does, children, you know, begin getting off the bus. Brittany did not get off the bus. So Connie asked the bus driver, like, did you see Brittany? And they didn't. So because of the proximity of the school to the home, not that much time had passed. Like, we're talking just, you know, maybe 10 or 15 minutes has passed at this point in time. So Connie called the police to report the incident, and the search for Brittany began immediately. They did not waste any time. So using Rose's description of the brown, she said she thought it was a brown truck that the kidnapper had, police set up roadblocks with instructions to question anyone and any kind of vehicle that could be what she was referring to. So police and community members began searching the area for any sign of Brittany. At 9 a.m., just 2 hours after the abduction, police found Brittany's backpack, shoes, and clothes on a dirt road just 2 miles away from her house. But there was no Brittany. So they continued searching, and then, you know, by the time it got dark, they're like, okay, we're, you know, there's no point in us, you know, maybe missing something, so we'll, you know, we'll wait till the next day. But so the day ended without any sign of Brittany, just her belongings. So the very next morning, hundreds of people went out to look for Brittany. There were volunteers, there was the fire department, there were employees from the jail, and there was law enforcement. So everyone was determined to find her and, of course, was hoping to find her alive. But that hope all drained when Brittany's body was found at 2 p.m. that day, just 3 miles from her home. She had been drowned and her body was left in a drainage ditch. It is unclear whether or not that drainage ditch is the location which she was drowned at, or if she was brought there after she was drowned elsewhere. She had been sexually assaulted. So the search for Brittany turned into a homicide investigation, and the police were flooded with tips. According to Jay Tilley, who is a State Bureau of Investigation agent, there was not enough manpower to handle the amount of information being called into them. But none of the information led them anywhere near finding her murderer. So everyone close to Brittany's family, including Brittany's estranged father, were questioned and cleared of the crime. Investigators also questioned the people in Brittany's neighborhood, but nobody had gotten a good look at the truck, or to say that it was probably brown, and nobody got a good look at the man except to say that he was probably white. Investigators also researched the known sex offenders in the area, but nothing gave them any leads. So the FBI created a behavioral profile of Brittany's killer. And these are always so interesting to me. I would like to know more. I guess I could probably look it up. It really, honestly, that information is probably available. But I would like to know more about kind of how they come up with these profiles for people about based on what they think they look like and what they think their behavioral profile looks like. Maybe I'll do that for one of our future episodes, because I'm sure a lot of people would actually be interested in that. But anyways, so the FBI's profile says, quote, "They believed the murderer would seek to change his appearance and possibly his vehicle and would likely exhibit an extreme interest in news coverage of the case. They noted the killer might suddenly show a marked change in the amount of drugs, alcohol, or cigarettes he consumed and would be nervous or irritable if confronted." So, more tips came pouring in for a man matching this description, and they investigated each lead, but none of them were their guy. So the entire town was shook by Brittany's murder. And, you know, Rayford was a really small town, and it was a really innocent, safe, small town. And now it was a town where children didn't wait at the end of the driveway at the bus stop alone. And they didn't play outside of the sight of their parents. And that includes Brittany's half-sister, Brianna, who was only 18 months old when Brittany was murdered. Brianna even learned how to shoot a gun when she was just 3 years old.
Oh, wow.
So, in August of 2002, also, I do not recommend giving your three-year-old a gun.
Mm-mm.
I'm not trying to judge anybody there, but just as a rule of thumb, maybe not the best idea. In August of 2002, 44-year-old Keith Londieri was named as a suspect. He was a firefighter at Fort Bragg, which is about 20 miles from Rayford. It's located in Fayetteville, North Carolina. So Keith had gotten arrested for a robbery, and upon his locker being cleaned out, his employer found a newspaper clipping of Brittany in there from when she was abducted. It was never like publicly addressed why Keith had this picture in his locker of all places, because that's really fucking weird. Like, who does that?
Right, that is weird as fuck.
Like, the family didn't know him. So, but, you know, anyways, his DNA was compared to DNA found in Brittany's body, and it was not a match. So, just weird. There are currently no suspects in Brittany's murder. NCSBI has posted a $20,000 reward for information leading to the arrest and conviction of Brittany's murderer. So I do want to give that tip line real quick. It is 1-800-334-3000. So if anybody knows anything about what happened to Brittany or anything about that day, you can go forward. But, I mean, absolutely no idea who did that, why they would have done it, other than, you know, if she was sexually assaulted, other than, you know, a sexual motivation, likely. But why kill? I mean, here's the thing. Even if that's your motivation, why kill her?
Right.
I just don't know. It's just frustrating. It's heartbreaking.
It is, and it's like she was waiting outside of her house for her bus stop, like, or for her bus. Like, you're in this like comfort zone of your own house. You know, your mom's there, like, neighbors there. Like, you never expect this kind of thing to happen, and it's like,
right.
It it turns your world upside down, and I will never understand. And once again, this is why my child wears a backpack and she does not leave my sight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I completely understand. And it's just, I keep thinking about it, and I'm like, in my head, if you, like, you know, I always think about when people abduct children. Mm-hmm. Like, have you been watching this child? Is this child specifically a child that you have been seeking out, or was this a crime of opportunity? Because to me, this very much, I can see it both ways. Because, like, part of it is, like, crime of opportunity because he's kind of an idiot. Like, he, you know, there were so many witnesses. You would think that he would have, like, not done it in broad daylight with people outside and parents watching their children. Like, it's the worst possible time to do that, right? But
yeah,
at the same time, maybe he did know. Maybe he knew exactly what time the bus came. And, you know, what, like, what very small time frame he had to rush in there and grab her. If he was really looking for her specifically. You know what I mean? And I don't know. I can go both ways on that. Do you have an opinion on that?
I feel like I can go both ways too. But I kind of feel like, it's meditated, because like premeditated, like he had to be watching her and know the routine. And, I'm in like that gray area, because if he had really been watching her and, you know, picked her out as his next victim, you know, I feel like he would have noticed, like, every day she comes out through the bus stop. But if he's, like, paying attention to her surroundings, like, he would have seen that, oh, her mom watches her every day from the window.
Right.
Or, oh, there's all these people who are around her at this time. Why would I do that? So I kind of feel like maybe it's more of a crime of opportunity. Like, maybe he just didn't think, like, you know, most people, when I would go to the bus stop, my parents would be gone for work already.
Right.
Like, because school starts later than a regular job.
Exactly.
So, you know, maybe that's what he thought. And he was like, nobody's watching her, so why not go ahead and pick her up?
Right. No, I definitely think that that's a possibility, too. I'm kind of leaning a little bit more towards crime of opportunity. However, I think that he was familiar with the area. So, like, I think that he already knew what time the buses ran. You know what I mean? Like, I think he did, like, a fair amount of scoping out of the area and was like, okay, I know the bus comes at, like, 7:02 every day, and I know that there's a couple little girls on the street, whatever, and I know that there's never anybody standing with her at the end of the driveway. You know what I mean? Or, like, yeah. I never see parents, like, at the driveways. Like, so even if somebody sees me, I'm going to get rid of this car, or I'm going to do whatever. You know what I mean? I don't know. It's just, it's so risky. And I can't believe, I mean, I don't know. I guess when you're that psychologically fucked that you're going to do something like that to somebody, that maybe those risks aren't really part of the consideration of it.
Right, exactly. It's like you bypass, like, all of the common sense that you were born with, and then you're just like, I'm going to do this ugly, ridiculous thing, and fuck what happens to me afterwards.
Right, right. And it's terrible, and there's never been any justice for her. Not that there ever really is justice, but there's never been anybody who has, you know, had to be punished. Sorry, I can't spit this out at all. Who has been punished for this crime, and that's so much worse. Like, I can't even imagine, you know, I mean, what her mom must think, what her stepdad must think, you know, who were raising her, like, okay, and, you know, especially because now they have another little girl, like, can you imagine how protective they are? But and I can't blame them, but just in general, like, you know, they might know that person.
Exactly.
It could be anybody. And the fact that somebody was willing to, in broad daylight, pull over and get out of the car and grab a little girl and not worry about getting caught scares the shit out of me.
Really quick, and this is just, like, you know, a side note really quick. Did you happen to see the video, like, earlier this month, I think, of this guy who literally stopped at a bus stop because there was this girl sitting down, like, messing with her school stuff, and, like, he literally tried to grab her and she ran away from him?
No.
They caught it on camera. I'm gonna have to look it up to see where it was at, but yeah, this literally happened just a few weeks ago, I feel like it, and he was caught, though.
That's good. Actually, that just happened to you. I mean, not to you, but I remember Jasmine just told me the story where she was at Walmart, and, like, a short while after she left, somebody tried to abduct, excuse me, a little child.
Yes. Yeah, you're right. I totally forgot about that. How could I forget about that? Literally, like, the guy just, I was there in Walmart, and the guy basically, it seemed like he was following this mom and her child, and they went to, you know, before you get into Walmart, they're off to the side, you have the carts where you go get your cart, then go inside. And he literally seized his opportunity, I guess is one way to say it. But like he went and he snatched the little kid up, and like all you can see in the video is like he turns around and starts running. But luckily the mom, her like responses were like quick, and she was able to pull her child away by one leg from this person. It was crazy.
It was.
I did actually see, I did look it up for the other one that I was telling you. It was an 11-year-old girl, and this was in Florida, fights off an attempted kidnapping in Florida. This was on May 21st, 2021.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's happening all over the place, and there were cameras everywhere. Like, this guy freaking, we were just talking about, did it at Walmart. Like, you know what I mean? People.
Right.
I don't understand. I don't understand. But please, please, please keep your kids on a leash. Really, really. I understand why people do it. I understand why you do it, Jasmine, because that's exactly how I would be. I would be a helicopter parent. My child would hate me, and it's something I would have to deal with because people are crazy, and people will do whatever they have to do to commit whatever kind of crime it is that they so passionately feel that they need to do. So,
absolutely.
Stay safe. Keep your kids safe. And oh my gosh, and if you know anything about what happened to Brittany, please, please, please call the tip line, because you know there's still an opportunity for that case to be solved at some point, and I hope that it is for her sake. So we will post pictures of Brittany on our Instagram, which you can find at
Crafts, Drafts, and Crime.
You can follow us on Facebook to see when we release new episodes, especially this month when we are releasing a couple extra ones on a few extra days. You can do that at
Crafts and Crime.
You can follow us on Twitter at...
Oh, sorry. Crafts and Crime. The other one was Crafts, Drafts, and Crime.
Whatever. You guys know how to find us.
I totally messed it up. I had one job. I'm sorry.
It doesn't matter. Anyways, if you want to send us an email with a story or with any thoughts on this case or, you know, what you think might have happened, because this is absolutely nuts, yeah, do it. Send us an email at...
CraftsDraftsAndCrime@gmail.com.
And if you want to subscribe to our Patreon, we actually have kind of a interesting similar story coming up for July for our True Crime in the News that has recently been solved. So that's going to be really exciting. And also for this month, we are going to be releasing an episode on the Ariel Castro kidnappings. So you can subscribe to our Patreon at
CraftsDraftsAndCrime.
And we, you know, of course, we do all of this for free. The Patreon is our only way of getting any kind of, you know, money for anything, which is, you know, we have very few followers, which is totally fine. But we do want to also just let you know that we are going to be donating our, what's it called, our profit from the Patreon this month to a specific charity to celebrate Pride Month. More information will be on our Patreon about that, so you can read all about that on there. So if you do join this month, the proceeds from this month are going to that charity. So most importantly, keep listening, and thank you so much for continuing to listen. Until next time, bye.
Bye.